Hot 1027 Business with Michael Avery.
Transaction Capital extended its track record of high-quality organic earnings growth in the first 6 months of the 2022 financial year. Core headline earnings up 38% to 603 million rand, and core headline earnings per share growing by 28% to 83.7 cents, declaring an interim divvy of 33 cents per share. I'm joined now by CEO David Hurwitz. Great to chat again, David. Your reliability of earnings is becoming the stuff of legend on the street. So well done to you and the management team. How was this result achieved in such a volatile environment?
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on the show. Yes, I mean, earnings have been consistent over our 10-year period of being listed. But thankfully, you know, we've got a very diverse group and, you know, different parts of our business have delivered different earnings growth rates at different periods. So if we take a look at this recent period, our investment into We Buy Cars has really been fantastic. We now own a greater component of that business's in the prior half year, we owned just under 50%, and now we own just under 75%. So we had the benefit of consolidating more of those earnings, but also had the benefit of very high growth earnings in that business. The business group earnings at 100% of 58%. And then, of course, we consolidated a greater component. So that was fantastic. Our risk services division also performed really, really well. What we've been doing over there is using our South African infrastructure, which is rand-denominated and low-cost, to generate revenues offshore in hard currency. And that's also driven fantastic growth. And finally, if you look at SA Taxi, you know, that industry, the minibus taxi industry, is still facing some headwinds with high fuel prices and still lower commuter volumes. And, you know, that business really moved sideways, still a little bit below the 2021 year, but really a good combination of different parts of our businesses pumping at different times.
And let's start with We Buy Cars. As you say, now the largest earnings contributor. You launch your own finance and insurance products in the second half. I can't see any data on the take-up. What's that been like so far?
Yeah, so if we just take a look at the take-up of finance and insurance products in general, that has increased significantly. So when we bought the business, it was sitting at about 13% or so. And now 17% of our clients take up a finance or an insurance product when they buy a car from us. So although it sounds like a small movement from 13 to 17, you know, on a base that's, you know, 4% up on 13 is roughly 30% up. So, you know, that has grown. That penetration has moved very, very nicely. We did state that we were going to always launch our own product, which we've done.
Yep.
It's brand new. We've probably done about 200 loans. So it's still in pilot phase. But we're really seeing a fantastic opportunity to be financing cars to high credit quality customers who are buying older cars that the banks are not happy to fund. Mm. And really what we're doing here is we have a combination of scoring the credit of the customer, but also scoring the value of the collateral. And because we're comfortable to take an older car back if we have to repossess it, and because we are selling and trading older cars all the time, we know that if we have to repossess a car, we can take it back and we can sell it pretty quickly with very little cost in the middle. So that allows us to open up a whole new market where the banks don't go. And it's proving to be very exciting.
If you look at your US peers, Carvana here, for example, it makes most of its money on F&I. So this is certainly exciting the market. You said today that part of We Buy Cars' competitive offering is driven by AI. Now, it's a buzzword we always hear it bandied about, artificial intelligence, AI-led pricing in particular. Can you just explain how this works?
So really what we're doing, there are two things here. What we're doing is we're buying about more than 10,000 cars a month. And because we've got such a large database of what we buy these cars for and what we ultimately sell them for, we're able to provide a seller or a consumer with a price almost immediately online. So if you wanted to sell your car and you put through the details of the car, the model, the age, the condition, we could very quickly provide you with a price. And what our algorithm targets is a certain margin and a certain stock turn so that we can sell the car within. We target about 25 days so that we're not left with any bad stock on our balance sheet. That's the one thing that we do, and that works particularly well. The other thing that we're pretty good at is we then track the interest in that particular car. So people will log onto our website and click on the car and take a look at it. If you come onto our floor, there's a QR code that you would scan to get all the details of the car sent to your phone. And we would track how many people are clicking on the car or scanning the codes, and also how many test trials are happening. And to the extent there is a high interest in the car, we'll hold the price steady. To the extent we see lower interest, we start turning the selling price of the car down. And this all then enables us to make sure that we sell our cars within a certain time frame and hopefully also at a certain margin. And the tech is working really, really well, and it's old. That's not new. This has been, you know, in the business for years.
Very interesting that. You know, I ask as well because clearly there's a lot of competition in this space globally. I believe locally, CarTrack is entering into the market. What's your moat in the We Buy Cars business? Because some say, well, it's easy to just rent a parking lot and put up a website. What would you say your moat is?
I think there are a few things. So a lot of people talk about entering the space, but in truth, our model is very, very unique. We will provide someone with a firm price. If you want to sell your car, we'll provide you with a firm price, and normally within hours, you'll have cash in your account. So we take risk on the car. There are lots of new players which are platforms. They'll market your car on a platform, and then depending on what the buyer buys it for, they'll take a click and you'll get your price. But they're not controlling the customer experience. When we buy a car from a person, they are transacting with us, and we control that experience and we give them a delightful experience. And we've got the data to allow us to take the risk to take principal positions and buy cars outright. So that's one moat. But probably the biggest moat is really our brand. You know, people always talk about, you know, the creepy crawly of pool cleaners, you know, or the Netflix of digital TV on demand. So, you know, when people think about selling their car, I think our brand comes into their mind very quickly. We spend a lot on that, you know, more than 25 million rand a month goes into advertising, whether it's on our billboards or whether it's on the radio or whether it's on the Blitzbox or whether it's our main channel is all over social media. So that is a huge barrier. And then finally, you know, the land grab of having dealerships all over the country. Now, previously what we did is we'd sell our cars in these huge dealerships in the big centers, Joburg, Pretoria, Durban, Cape Town. And those dealerships could easily hold 1,000+ cars. What we're doing now is we're opening up dealerships in much smaller centers, places like Nelspruit and Polokwane, with maybe 300 cars at a time. And we've proved that works, and we will open up small. Look, they're still very big. 300 cars is big, you know, bigger than our usual competitor, but they're much smaller than what we're used to. So we'll open up these smaller dealerships all over the country, and that as well will entrench us into the market. But it's a huge market, Michael. We have less than 10% market share.
Yeah, and that's the exciting prospect. You've reached 10,000 cars a month ahead of schedule. You want to get up to 15,000. That indicates over the medium term you're going to have to double capacity. So lots of runway still for growth. And then you're taking the business international into Morocco. Why this particular market? What's the potential challenge, equally the big opportunity in this expansion?
So just as we've done with TCRS, where we're using our local tech and our local capabilities to generate revenue lines offshore, we wanted to test doing the same thing for We Buy Cars. And we haven't bought anything. We've taken a team of people that have, you know, previously worked for us in South Africa. They've moved into Morocco. They've hired a few people, and they're buying cars, you know, one and two at a time and selling one and two at a time just to check that our algorithms work. Now, why did we choose Morocco? A few reasons. I'd say the main reason is that Morocco, just like South Africa, does not import secondhand cars. So it allows our algorithm, well, that provides a certain level of stability within secondhand car prices, and it allows our algorithm to calculate what pricing would be. You don't have any of these adjustments or shocks with big volumes of cars being imported and then not coming back in for a long period of time. So we like that. The country in terms of the car park is similar to South Africa, a little bit smaller, but similar. By only opening up three sites, you can cover the vast majority of the economic activity in the country. You know, through Casablanca and Marrakesh and one other, we cover most of the country. And then the country itself is, you know, as far as Africa goes, it's in pretty good shape. And although it's very close geographically to Europe, it also is in terms of kind of the way the business, right, the country runs. So we were very excited about that. And it's very early days, but all indications is that we can build a very nice business out in Morocco. And we'll try one or two others probably over the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, I think compelling beachhead, if you paint it all together like that, a very healthy private equity industry as well. I know lots of good exits happen there. Turning now to probably the concern, and you mentioned the fact that your earnings have been resilient because you've got these uncorrelated parts in the business. Now, it is a concern, obviously, with the petrol price where it is and what's happening with SA Taxi at the moment, to borrow probably from the Bank of England, the petrol price locally is nearing apocalyptic levels. If we get a R3.50 a litre increase in petrol, what impact are you modelling this to potentially have on your SA Taxi business? Because these costs now have to be passed on to consumers, and there's going to be a knock-on effect.
Yes, so and it's not only the petrol price. I mean, there are a few headwinds facing the minibus taxi industry. We've got the petrol price, which you've articulated very well. We also still have commuter volumes not yet fully recovered. We anticipate that they will recover to pre-COVID levels very, very shortly, probably in a matter of months. But commuter volumes are still a little bit lower, which is on the revenue side of the business. And then, you know, vehicle prices have gone up by about, the Toyota minibus taxi has gone up by about 3.5% over the 6 month period. So higher vehicle prices, higher fuel prices, lower commuter volumes generating revenue. And of course, what the industry did is not increase fares since the beginning of COVID. Typically, what the industry does is it takes a look at kind of the increase in costs, it takes a look at commuter volumes, and then it increases fares kind of to even off their equation. And if you take a look from 2013 to 2020, fares have gone up by about 9.3% per year. So we do need, the first thing we need is we do need a fare increase to come through, which the industry has already signaled to the market. Probably June, July, we'll see some increases coming through. What we've had to do is a few things. We've been very, very selective on our credit and really, you know, picking the eyes out of the credit and, you know, only really lending to the best. We have been enticing our customers to rather purchase our pre-owned vehicles, which are cheaper and hence more affordable, but very robustly built and good for the job. We've extended the term of our loan a little bit so to make, you know, installments a little bit lower, which again helps with affordability. And this has worked really well. So, you know, if you take a look at our business, all the operational metrics are good. And collections in March and April were actually very, very strong. So we're very comfortable with that, and we think we're doing the right things. It's just going to take a little bit of time for this industry to normalize. And now, of course, right at the death of everything, we get the Toyota plant flooded.
So that wasn't
great for us either.
Talk about perfect storms, no pun intended, with those floods just topping everything off. It's an old debate. Is it time for government now to really seriously consider providing more formal support to the taxi industry? Because, as you say, are not passing costs on during COVID. They're now going to the operators be forced to pass these costs on to commuters. They're the least able to afford it. And then that feeds into rising wage demands and spiraling inflation. Yep. I mean, there's a strong, encouraging case to be made for more public support for the biggest mover of commuters in the country.
Yeah, and as you say, it is the biggest mover, which makes the expense to the commuter non-discretionary. I mean, the average commuter just cannot get around not being in the minibus taxi industry, moving in the minibus taxi industry. So it's a positive for us that it's a non-discretionary spend. Commuters need support. And government's been talking for ages around supporting the minibus taxi industry, but just doesn't seem to be able to get this right. And I think we've had the debate before where people have said, well, you know, the industry doesn't pay tax, so, you know, that's the government support. But that's not really true. We pay fuel levies, which are in the billions of rands. And the industry pays VAT on the acquisition of cars. Not to mention, I don't know if our customers pay tax or not, but you know, they're getting caught somewhere in the tax net. So I agree with you. It really does need support.
David, we're going to have to leave it there. You've started a strategic repositioning of your business models, obviously in line with the evolution over the years, but we just don't have time to go into that. We'll touch on that during our next results call. Take care.
Thank you, Michael.
That was David Herbert, CEO of Transaction Capital, some of the most reliable management teams on the JSE, always delivering and the market liking the results on a pretty skittish day, up 2%. You're listening to Hot Business.
Hot 102.7 Business with Michael Avery.